Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway, and we're first of all going to be reviewing the last two programs that we had, beginning with The God That We Believe, and we followed that last week by the importance of His law for our lives. As much as anything, those two programs were a reminder of God's call on us to obedience. As he says in Leviticus 11:44, that we should sanctify ourselves and be holy as he is holy. So that brings us to a natural question for our program today. If we say that we believe in God, and if we accept his law for how we should live, then what are some of the false gods in our lives that try to draw us away from God and from his laws? What do they look like? Are they really real? And why does it matter anyway? And I like to look back at the Old Testament prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah, who repeatedly confronted the nation of Israel with their sins and their false gods. Now imagine, what might those prophets say to us about our world today? What false gods might they see in our lives and in the culture around us? Well, we could start with some words from Galatians chapter 5, in which Paul describes what we might consider to be false gods because they draw us away from God. That list includes adultery, fornication, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, anger, envy, murder, wild partying, and drunkenness. That is quite a list. Now, many of these are also listed in Proverbs among the things that God hates. Another reference is in 1 John, where he puts these false gods into a general basket and refers to these false gods as pursuing the love of the world rather than the love of God. Well, that gives us the context for what we're going to be talking about today. And to help bring this into our lives and the culture around us, Rita and I will attempt to provide you with a list of what we call the Dirty Dozen, 12 false gods that draw us away from God and into sin. They all start with the letter P to make them easier for us to remember. We'll be using biblical texts and examples to illustrate and to identify these false gods. And then we'll add some modern-day parallels for our application. So, unless you're driving, take out a notepad, write them all down, then test yourself afterward to see how many of these false gods are knocking at your door and causing you problems.
I didn't know there was going to be a test.
Well, Rita, what's our first false god?
Okay, well, number one is a biggie, Dean, and it is the false god of pride, the father of all false gods. Yes. It was Lucifer's pride, we know, that drove him to challenge God and forced God to throw him out of heaven. And it is pride that continues to challenge all of us today. I don't know anyone who doesn't struggle with this one. We learn in Genesis 3 that it was pride that drove Eve to listen to the false god in the garden. It was her pride that drove her to disobey God's command not to eat of the forbidden fruit. In Romans 1, over in the New Testament, we learn that it is pride that drives men to worship themselves as the creature rather than God who created him. And then carrying on into today, we set ourselves up as God. This is just so pronounced in our culture today. We don't like God's laws, so we write our own in such a way that they allow us to live for our own pleasure, our own happiness. And we can look around and see this today in the form of abortion, aborting a baby if the baby doesn't fit into our plans, all types of sexual immorality. You know, we want to make our own laws because we don't like God. So we decide that we can break our marriage vows if that's what brings us the most happiness. We decide it's okay to engage in sexual conduct with people of our own gender, or even to attempt to change our own gender, depending upon how we feel. These are all indications of this false god of pride.
Well, Rita, you nailed me already. As you said, it is a false god that really afflicts all of us, yes. And it drives the next 11 false gods in our lives.
I think so, too.
It is indeed the father of all false gods. But it gets even worse when it gets mixed in with the false god of power. Mm-hmm. We're calling this our second false god. And again, we go to the Bible, and we see it in the story of Pharaoh, who ordered the death of baby boys, of King Herod, who also ordered the death of baby boys because they might interfere with their own plans. And we see it in the story of Nebuchadnezzar, who threw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fiery furnace, and then of his advisors who threw Daniel into the lion's den. They combined their pride and they applied it with their power. And that is something that I think threatens all of us today, because it is this toxic mix of pride and power that also drives today's activist judges and elected leaders to do things that should never be done. You've already referred to it, legalizing abortion and even same-sex marriage. And it came out so graphically in the last century, when dictators like Joseph Stalin, Adolf Hitler, and Mao Zedong became drunk with power and killed over 100 million people during their reigns of terror. Mm-hmm. And it demonstrates so graphically what Lord Acton so famously observed, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, especially when it is mixed with our pride.
Yeah. Well, that one really leads right into the third false god of politics. For example, Pilate listened to the political gods when he gave Jesus over to be executed, even though he knew Jesus was innocent. He thought that was the best thing for him to do from a political perspective.
Political expediency.
And Jesus was crucified as a result. Jewish leaders who believed in Jesus also listened to their political gods when they refused to defend Jesus because they were afraid of being kicked out of the synagogue if they did. Even Peter listen to a false god by denying Jesus at the end because of his own fear of being persecuted. However, we know that Jesus never budged. He spoke truth to power, even though it eventually cost him his life. We need to ask today, how often do our political leaders deny God, either by their silence or by their words or their actions? They bow to political pressures to remove God from public schools and from the public square. And I would add one more, Dean, and that is that sometimes we, as ordinary American citizens, bow to this false god of politics when we look to politics and to government to address all of our problems, to provide for all of our needs, to take care of us. That is another way we bow to that false god of politics.
Well, Rita, we just get lazy, don't we? We look to others to fix the problems that we should take responsibility for fixing ourselves, and we make politics our false god. We become so obsessed with it that if we don't get the right person into office the way we want, we just go into apoplexy.
Yes, we do.
And it's that false god of politics that can so easily ensnare us. Well, really, Rita, that's linked also to our number four, the false god of prestige. It is that false god of prestige that drove Jewish leaders to demand that Jesus be crucified because his power and his popularity were threatening their own positions and authority and prestige. Mm-hmm. Even after his crucifixion, they demanded that Jesus' disciples stop preaching because it threatened their prestige. To their credit, however, Peter and John refused to stop, perhaps in part because they had no prestige to defend. Mm-hmm. Other followers and apostles, like Paul, also refused to stop, despite severe persecution and even death. Again, that false god of prestige had no power over them. But that's where it comes close to home. You've already touched on it. Like some politicians, how often do we also deny God in our own lives by what we say or by what we do in order to protect our own prestige in our communities.
Yes, and closely related to prestige is the next false god, the god of popularity. It's a little bit different, but similar. Exodus 32 perhaps gives us one of the best examples in the Bible of leaders doing something wrong just to stay popular with the people. And that was when Aaron built a golden calf for the people to worship while Moses was in the mountain getting the Ten Commandments. Aaron gave in and said yes to the people's demands when he should have held his ground and said no. Do we see indications of that today, Dean, among church leaders who compromise biblical truth in order to please the people? Today, I would especially point to controversial issues like abortion and homosexuality. We're talking about those issues a lot today because that's the big one right now. Those two are the big two that are so controversial today. That's the pressure point that we see so many people caving on. So we have to ask, is this false god of popularity what has driven self-identified Christian schools like EMU and Goshen College in Indiana to bow down to activists who demanded that they recognize same-sex relationships as marriage? Were they driven by this false god of popularity? I don't know. Then on the other hand, we can look at people like Kim Davis, the florist Baronel Stutzman in Washington, bakers Aaron and Melissa Klein in Oregon, and many others who have stood for truth come what may at great personal sacrifice and who therefore refused to support same-sex weddings because the scriptures said they were wrong. Those people have been more concerned with pleasing God than with pleasing man. They show their belief that it's more important, as Jesus taught, to enter in at the straight gate and follow the narrow way that leads to life rather than the wide gate and the broad way that leads to destruction.
Rita, this is such a pernicious false god.
Yes.
We talk about young people having to face up to peer pressure. Adults face that same pressure.
Absolutely,
even though we
right.
don't like to admit it. But it reminds me, one of the first church leaders that I met to talk about issues like this that the Valley Family Forum is pursuing, he looked at me and he said, "Dean, I believe in what you are doing and the issues that you are promoting, but I can't preach them in my pulpit because my congregation is divided." It stunned me. And I wanted to ask, do you have to take a poll among your congregation in order to decide what you should preach? And that's that pernicious false god.
The attitude of being a thermometer rather than a thermostat.
Well said.
I wasn't
Is that
the first
original?
One to, no. I can't claim it, sorry.
No, that's exactly right. And to follow the shifting sands and winds of the culture rather than the truth of Scripture.
Yeah.
Well, Rita, that really also, these are all connected. Because our next false god, number six, if you're counting, is the false god of pleasure that can so easily draw us away from God himself. You've already mentioned the story in Exodus 32 a minute ago, where Aaron built this golden calf. In that instance, the people danced naked around the golden calf. Mm. They worshiped it while Moses was getting the Ten Commandments from God. This desire for pleasure just sucks us in to doing things we ought not do. Now, hopefully, none of us would take pleasure to that extreme. Hopefully, we would not. However, many of us, and I'm talking now about my own false gods of pleasure, I enjoy sports, both playing and watching sports. But to be honest, I can easily spend much more time watching sports than the time that I spend with God. I can easily spend big bucks and spend entire days going to sports temples. Temples, that's what they remind me of, to cheer for my favorite team. That can so easily become a false god in my own life, and I know for others. For others, they might have a different false god, like music I always see people with these buds in their ears. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what they're listening to, but I can imagine that has consumed much of their time and of their passion. Yeah. Movies the same way. We know more about movie stars than we do characters in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so this false god of pleasure sucks us in so easily, doing things that we ought not do.
Well, and just to be clear on this, as with some of the other false gods in this list, we're not saying that there's something wrong with pleasure in and of itself. And I love the way Paul Tripp put it, and I hope I can do justice. This is not a quote, but sort of a paraphrase. He said, a good thing becomes a bad thing when we make it an ultimate thing. Isn't that good? I love the way he said that.
That is perfect.
That really expresses it well. There's nothing wrong with pleasure, but when we bow down to it and make it the primary focus, and when we get angry because our time of pleasure gets disrupted somehow, that's when we know we have a problem.
Well, and that's such an important context, Rita, and you can apply it to the next false god.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. Number seven is the false god of possessions. There is nothing wrong with accumulating wealth and possessions. For as Paul says in his first letter to Timothy, chapter 4, it is not money itself that is evil, but rather the love of money that can lead men astray like a false god when it drives our decision making. We are warned against the false god of possessions in Deuteronomy 8, that when we grow rich, we must be careful not to forget the God who made all this possible. Jesus also warned against this in Matthew 19:21 with the example of a rich young ruler who asked God what he must do to have eternal life. When Jesus told him to sell all that he had and give it to the poor, he couldn't do it. It had become like a god to him. Therefore, to avoid wealth becoming a false god, Jesus taught in Matthew 6:20 that we should lay up our treasure in heaven rather than on earth, for where our treasure is, there shall our heart be also.
That is a real challenge.
Yeah.
Well, Rita, this next one gets really exciting. It's the false god of passion. Mm-hmm. Like you said, God has given us that gift of passion.
Yes.
But it is the power of the false god of passion in our lives that is also ever present in a way that draws us into sin. And perhaps the best example that we have in the Bible is that of David, who God considered to be a man after his own heart. But he committed adultery, the story that we're all so familiar with, committed adultery with Bathsheba. And then to compound that sin, he had her husband killed to cover it up. Samson is another example, betrayed by his passion for Delilah. And then Solomon, led astray by his passion for many wives and concubines. I just need to make this very clear. None of us is immune from the enticements of this false god of passion. Many men and even women are tempted today to turn to pornography to satisfy that passion and to give them sexual satisfaction. But Jesus made it very plain that to look is the same as to act. He said that we commit adultery even when we just look at a woman with lust in our hearts. And we need to face this front on. Pornography becomes addictive, it becomes progressive, and it becomes destructive, as is the case with every other false god that we've just described.
That's right. That takes us up to number 9. Fortunately, I'm the one who got assigned number 9.
Oh, boy. This is another big one.
It is perversity. Now, this false god is so obvious that all of us should recognize it and reject it whenever it whispers in our ears. Hopefully, none of us would ever say that we support, much less worship, perversity. But Dean, it's important for us to talk about this one because perversity is in our face every day, and it seems to be getting worse and worse in our culture. In many ways, America today just seems to be in a moral free fall because of the boldness of this false god of perversity. And we could talk about abortion in this context. We could talk about homosexuality, and actually every form of sexual immorality comes up with this one. But, you know, what stands out to me, what makes it not only the sin of sexual immorality, but actually what makes it perversity, is the fact that in our culture today, it is celebrated. It is celebrated. And it makes me so sad to see the saturation of our culture in everything that is sexual. You cannot go anywhere without noticing how sexually charged everything in our culture has become. The most recent sort of iteration of this is the whole gender thing. We now want to be able to define our own gender by our feelings rather than by how God made us at birth. Perversity is a big one today, unfortunately.
Well, Rita, I guess we can pound this and pound it, but we've already mentioned abortion. We would deny that we are a pagan culture.
Yep.
And yet the pagan culture is the one in which people sacrifice their babies to an idol called Molech. Mm-hmm. It was a sacrifice to the false god of their convenience. Mm-hmm. We talked about celebrating perversity, and yet in this last week, we saw gay parades across the country celebrating the perversity of homosexual relationships. Yeah. You've talked about redefining our gender, and we're expected to redefine our gender by our feelings rather than by the way that God made us at birth. Mm-hmm. We can go on and on. But that is the false god of perversity that is just in our faces every day. Mm-hmm. Well, Rita, that then brings us to another false god that is much more subtle than perversity. And this one is about peace.
Yep.
Now, how on earth can peace be considered a false god? Well, we sing, for example, about Jesus as the Prince of Peace. But we have to keep in mind that he also used a whip to drive religious leaders out of the temple. In Matthew 10, he said he came not to send peace on earth, but a sword. There's another example from the Old Testament. Nehemiah was rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. He told his people to carry swords and to fight to protect their families if they were attacked. And yet today, we have church leaders who refuse to confront evil and to defend our families, our communities, and our nation if and when we are attacked. Instead, they might even compromise with the attackers and call it peace, even where there is no peace. Again, peace is something to be applauded, but it can become a false god if we carry it to an extreme.
That's right. Well, number 11, Dean, is sort of similar in a way, and it is the false god of piety. Now, this is more difficult to detect than some of the others, like perversity. But Jesus exposed it again and again when talking about Pharisees who acted great and looked righteous in public, but they exploited the people for their own gain. In Matthew 23, Jesus called them hypocrites because they worked so hard to be clean on the outside, but they were corrupt on the inside. In Matthew 6, he accused them of giving generously to the poor and praying long prayers in public just to impress the people who may be watching. And you know, today we have to ask ourselves, do we sometimes try to look good when people are watching and yet indulge in our secret sins when no one is around?
Well, Rita, we're right near the end here. One more.
Oh, dear. I don't know if I can make it, Dean.
Now, you would expect us to have a bomb for our last one. This should end with a blast, but I'm reminded of T.S. Eliot. We're ending with a whimper instead of an outcry, because this last one is so subtle. Mm. It is the false god of pulchritude.
You better define that, Dean.
Well, okay.
It comes from the Latin, right?
It does. Pulchritude is a word for beauty.
Yeah.
But it has to begin with a P. Mm-hmm. That's why it's pulchritude.
Okay.
But again, it is so innocent. Beauty is a good thing. We all want to look good, but this is another one of those subtle false gods that makes us look good on the outside, even when we need a lot of help on the inside. Now, we saw this false god in pagan cultures that made women into temple goddesses and prostitutes because of their physical beauty and sexual attraction. Now, this may be an overstatement that I'm about to utter here, but don't we do the same thing today when we applaud movie and entertainment stars for their beauty and their bodies, despite their immoral lifestyles and choices? Yeah. We fall down at the throne of beauty and exploit it and abuse it. And so therefore, perhaps we need to look, and trying to be positive on this, we need to look at Proverbs 31 that describes true beauty in a woman. It's one who is virtuous, one who fears the Lord, one who speaks with wisdom and with kindness, and she takes good care of her household and also provides for the poor. She works hard. She is trustworthy. She dresses modestly, and she is praised for her good deeds.
Is that it?
That's it.
The Dirty Dozen? Well, you know, Dean, I want to say something before we close.
Yes.
This has been a heavy program and definitely sobering.
Because it exposes the sin in all of our lives and
in
our culture.
In all of us.
Yes.
I know I feel convicted as I've sat here today talking about this list of the Dirty Dozen. So I want to say to our listeners, if you're feeling heavy, if you're feeling convicted, if you're recognizing that, yes, you, like Dean and like me, have bowed down to some of these false gods, yes, God is a holy God, and He is a God of mercy, and thank goodness for that. He has provided for our forgiveness and our salvation. He has provided rescue for us through faith in Jesus Christ, who came and lived a perfect life. He didn't bow down to any of these false gods, and He died on the cross in our place so that we could be right with God. So I want to say to you, if you're listening today, if you're feeling burdened, if you're feeling convicted, come to Jesus today and receive His mercy and His grace. He is so happy to give it to those who seek it.
Yes.
So this brings us to a close of our program today on the Dirty Dozen, 12 false gods in our lives today. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway. And we thank so many of you out there for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. And finally, we just want to thank you for joining us today. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
Rock and my song, like He said, He has become my salvation. From the house of the Lord, we give glory.